gee, Tom, that's very pretty. It's very stirring.
Thank you, Bob.
And in a way, it's sort of appropriate, but that's not... I don't even know how to tell you this anymore, Tom, but once again, that is not my theme music.
Well, I know it's not your theme music, Bob, but I'm, like you say, I'm trying to help out. I mean, you're doing a show by British royalty, right? And so we got God save
Tom, oh, what did I do? Tom, this is... it's British rarities. Would you just please just turn that off and put my theme on, please?
What?
British rarities, rare British comedy. Would you just turn it off and put my theme on?
Right, Bob. Right away.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy presented every Friday night here at KCRW. Tonight we are going to listen to some British rarities, some of the formative pieces which led to the later successes of Monty Python's Flying Circus and Beyond the Fringe. The roots of these two groups occurred in the university reviews of Oxford and Cambridge, and it really is too bad that none of the Oxford reviews have been preserved. We do have the Cambridge Circus on tape, and I'll be playing a little piece of that later featuring John Cleese. But let's start out with one of the early pieces that led to Beyond the Fringe and later to Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. These are some of the earliest pieces written by Peter Cook. He was still in college when he wrote these, and they were for a pair of reviews called Pieces of Eight and One Over the Eight. Oddly enough, the other main contributor to these shows was Harold Pinter, at least as far as the sketches were concerned. There were also musical numbers. And let me quote Cook here. He said, "The other main contributor was Harold Pinter. I was very cross at the time because royalties were awarded on the amount of time your contributions took up. Well, Harold Pinter's contributions took up an immense amount of time because he'd written all these pauses into his sketches, which I called the pay pause. I eventually submitted a sketch which consisted almost entirely of significant pauses, but he knew perfectly well what I was up to, and it was rejected. It was an odd combination, Pinter and me. I've always been stuck with this thing that most of my ideas are only worth about 5 minutes. I love the sketch form."
Hands up, this is a hold-up. This is a hold-up. Hands up. Hold up your hands, this is a stick-up. Stick up your hands, this is a hold-up. Give me the money. Oh, I must get that right. Give me the money. Hands up, this is a stick-up. Give me the money. Hands up, this is a stick-up. Give me the money. Hands up, this is a stick-up. Give me the money. Oh, yes, that's it. Hands up, this is a stick-up. Give me the money. Hands up, this is a stick-up. Give me the money. Hands up, this is a stick-up. Give me the money. That's it. Hold hands, this is an up stick. With your sticks, this is a hand tool.
I beg your pardon?
I mean, this is a stick up. A hold stick.
A hold stick?
I mean, a hand stick.
Oh, I see. You mean this is a hold up.
Yes, that's right. It's a hold up, yes. Up with your hands and give me your money.
How?
What do you mean, how?
How do I give you the money? With my hands up?
Well, you put your hands up and give me the... No, you give me the money and then put your hand... Oh, I don't know. Work it out for yourself. But give me the money.
No, I don't think I will.
Come on.
Well, why should I?
I've got a gun, stupid.
Yes.
And it's loaded.
Yes.
With real bullets. And if I fire it, you'll be dead. Oh, sprued on the floor. Dead.
Well, go on then. Shoot me.
Do you mean that?
Yes.
Well, cross your heart and hope to die.
Cross my heart and hope to die.
Oh, it's Tom messing about. Give me the money.
No.
But you don't understand. I don't want to shoot you.
I know that.
You see, you're supposed to be terrified of my threat.
I see.
And I waggle the gun,
mm-hmm.
and you give me the money, and then I run out with the bag.
Of course.
But if I take the wrong one, you call me back and give me the right one.
Yes.
All right, then, shall we do it again?
Right.
All right, close your eyes. I won't go all the way out. I'll just go a little way. Up with your hands and give me your money. Ooh, what'd you press that for? It's the alarm bell.
I know.
Ooh, the police will be round here any minute.
Well, you better be quick.
Ooh, they'll take me away and put me in prison.
Well, hurry up and go away then.
What, without the money?
Yes, hurry. They'll be here any moment.
No, I won't go.
Get on, you idiot. I don't want you to go to prison.
I know you don't.
Well, go away then.
No, I'm not going.
Go on.
No.
Go on.
Won't.
Go on.
Shan't.
No, all right then. Take the money.
Thanks.
The time these were written, in about 1961, When Peter Cook was at Cambridge, there was a particularly obnoxious and ambitious younger student who got on everybody's nerves, whose name has gone on to become quite a household word and is used as an in-joke in this next piece entitled Critic's Choice.
Good evening, and welcome once again to Theatre Spotlight. Now, last week, The Heron Dies, a new play by David Frost, opened in London. The author is in the studio this evening to talk about it. Mr. Frost, how would you say your play has been received?
The Heron has had a very mixed critical reception, ranging right from disastrous all the way up to abysmal. The Telegraph found it tedious, the Mail found it insufferable, and the Express didn't find it at all. Or rather, they found it and left after only 7 minutes playing time. My writing has been variously described as trite, that's the Telegraph again, trivial, that was Mr. Tynan's word for it, and effete, as the Evening News was the nearest I got to a compliment, effete. Yes. The direction of the play, also by myself, is generally thought to be either loose, weak, or non-existent, and the playing of the leading role by my wife has been universally dismissed as ludicrous. So I think you can say we have had a pretty mixed bag.
And are you very disappointed at this reception?
No, I am not disappointed. Or rather, let me put it another way, I am disappointed. But it is a very difficult play to enjoy, and I'm not at all surprised that once again the critics have proved themselves incapable of appreciating my work.
And how has the public reacted to the piece?
The reaction of the general public has been extremely favourable. Those we have had in have sat there very quietly, and the bar sales have been out of this world.
Now, Mr. Frost, when I passed the theatre this morning, I noticed a great deal of activity going on outside.
Oh, yes, that was the management. They were very busy plastering up all the favourable notices which the play has received.
But I thought you said it's been universally condemned.
Well, that is true, but however, we managed to salvage one or two excerpts from the reviews that we feel will draw the public in. Yes, you may have noted that one, this play lasts 3 hours, the Evening Standard. That'll appeal, you see, to people who like to get their money's worth. And then there's What an Evening in the Theatre. Remember that one, Daily Herald?
Oh, yes.
What an Evening in the Theatre, yes. We had to cut out the word atrocious. We didn't feel it was fulfilling any useful purpose, so we put a few exclamation marks in instead. And then there was Mr. Frost Has a Hit, Daily Telegraph.
Oh, the Daily Telegraph thought it was a hit.
No, that's an extract from a longer sentence that Mr. Darlington wrote. Mr. Frost has a hit and miss approach to the theatre, which I find utterly exasperating.
No.
And then there was a Feast of Impeccable Acting News Chronicle.
But surely the News Chronicle has gone out of existence.
Exactly. That is merely a reconstruction of what we feel Mr. Alan Dent would have written had the paper been alive.
Now, Mr. Frost, there was one other notice which attracted my attention this morning, the one by Harold Hobson.
Oh, yes. I'm very glad you mentioned that. One of our better efforts, yes. An Evening of Incomparable Theatrical Splendor. Lovely performance by Stella Frost, haunting, human, hilarious. I shall go again and again and again. Oh, yes, we're very proud of that one.
Mr. Frost, I read the Sunday Times review, and as far as I can remember, he said that it was one of the most distressing evenings he'd ever spent in the theatre.
That is true. Mr. Hobson didn't appear to have enjoyed the play at all. But as you know, these critics have to write their pieces in a great hurry. They have to work to a deadline, you know. And quite often, I think they say things they don't really mean at all. That's the charitable view of it, anyway. So here we've taken the liberty of extracting individual letters from Mr. Hobson's original review and putting them together more carefully than he would have had time to do.
But surely that is a gigantic distortion of the truth.
That is correct. It's gigantic.
Do you mean to say you are quite deliberately setting out to deceive the public by twisting the critics' words to suit your own purposes?
That is the plan.
Well, Mr. Frost, I can only say I'm utterly disgusted at your behaviour, and I think your play is the most boring rubbish ever to reach London.
Thank you. May I quote you on that?
I should mention here that the main character in these is Kenneth Williams, who went on to star in the British series of films, the Carry On movies, some of which are very funny, and is to this day omnipresent on British television, both in game shows and comedy shows. You can hear in these the style that was later used by Cook and Moore. In fact, in this show, One Over the Eight, there is an early version of the fabulous routine of Cook and Moore with the one-legged man auditioning for the role of Tarzan. I think it was later done a lot better by Cook and Moore, which is why I'm not going to play it here now. But what I will play for you is a wonderful piece, which was later done about 15 years later in in one of the Amnesty International benefits, and it was done then by Cook and John Cleese, our two main subjects tonight. But we will listen to the original version here, which I think is actually a bit funnier, starring Kenneth Williams, and it's called Interesting Facts.
Hello.
Hello.
I think I'll sit down here.
Yes, you do that.
Hello again.
Hello.
Did you know you got 4 miles of tubing in your stomach?
I beg your pardon?
I said, did you know you got 4 miles of tubing in your stomach?
No, I didn't realize that.
Well, you have, in any case. 4 miles of it, all coiled up very tight.
Yes, I'd rather not think about it, thank you.
It has to be coiled up very tight, otherwise they never get it all in. It's interesting, isn't it, how they manage to cram it all in?
Yes, I suppose it is.
Because a special kind of tubing is used. You couldn't get 4 miles of any old tubing in your stomach.
No.
It's called intestines, and it folds up ever so small. That's how they manage to cram it all in. Aren't you interested in your intestines?
Not particularly.
Well, you ought to be, because they're very important. You'd be lost without your intestines. Would you like to see a diagram of your intestines? I've got one here in my little book.
No, thank you very much.
Well, it's not really a diagram of your intestines. Not unless it was you that modelled for it. And it couldn't be you, really, because you have to be dead before you can model for intestines.
Oh, do you?
Yes. So it's not a very good job to have, is it? There you are, you see? You see how far the food has to travel?
Yes, yes, I see.
4 miles it has to go. And it takes 4 hours. That's a mile an hour it goes.
I had no idea.
That means you never get any really fresh food in your stomach. It's all at least 4 hours old.
Fancy that?
No, I don't fancy that, thank you very much. I don't fancy it at all. I wish my intestines were shorter. Don't you wish your intestines were shorter?
I wish you'd leave my intestines out of it.
You can't leave your intestines out of it. You wouldn't be able to digest.
Let's just forget about my intestines, shall we?
All right, then. Would you like to hear an interesting fact about Chinamen?
Oh, very well. What is it?
Do you know that if all the Chinamen in the world was to link hands, they would girdle the earth 3 times?
3 times, eh?
Yes. Girdle, girdle, girdle. Because I haven't had time to check up on it, you know. I haven't had time to go around saying, Mr. Wang, meet Mr. Wong, link hands and see if you can girdle the earth. I'm too busy writing all the facts down in my little book. They are very interesting facts in my little book, aren't they?
Oh, yes, I'm fascinated.
For instance, did you know that the whale isn't really a fish at all? The whale is an insect and it lives on bananas.
The whale is an insect? I've never heard of such rubbish.
I know. It's a joke. I just made it up. I was having you on. It's one of my little jokes.
Yes, I see.
What about the grasshopper, then?
What about the grasshopper?
I don't know. Have you heard anything?
Oh.
No, but really, the grasshopper is a very interesting creature. Do you know it has a disproportionate leaping ability due to its very powerful hind legs? And it goes hop. It goes hop, hop, hop all over arable land. That is land where it's actually tilled by Arabs. Oh, and do you know an Arab can live for a whole year on 1 grain of rice?
A whole year on 1 grain of rice?
Yes, Oh, no, it's a mosquito that lives for a whole year on 1 grain of rice. I always get those two mixed up because I've got them on the same page. See, that's mosquito and Muslim.
Quite so, quite.
by his interest in any about the grasshopper's leaping ability. If a giraffe could leap pound for pound as high as a grasshopper, a giraffe could leap right onto the moon and thus lead Britain in a space race. That's an interesting fact, isn't it?
Yes, well, I'm rather bored with all your interesting facts.
That's interesting too, because you know what? I'm Britain's secret boring weapon.
You're Britain's secret boring weapon?
Yes. You see, if there's a war, they put me on an aeroplane, and I'm dropped on the enemies.
Dropped on the enemies?
Yes, and then I bore them all to death. I bore them all to death, you see?
I'm not at all surprised. I've never had such a load of...
Here, that's only a joke. Here, yes. That's a joke. It's just one of my little jokes. It's not a fact. It's just a joke.
Now, a few years later, after Cook left Cambridge, another crop of very talented kids came along in 1963, and their Cambridge reviews were so successful that they later went on tour and came to America with a show called Cambridge Circus. And the closing number, the fabulous all-out routine at the end, which featured the entire cast, was a courtroom scene written by John Cleese, and it was called Judge Not.
You are Arnold Fitch?
Definitely, yes.
You are hereby charged that on the 14th day of July, in the 1963rd year of our Lord, you did willfully, unlawfully, and with malice aforethought, assault one Sidney Bottle, a dwarf. How plead you, guilty or not guilty?
Definitely not guilty.
My lord, in this case, my learned friend, Mr. Maltravers, appears for the defence, and I appear for the money. The case... The case would appear to be a simple one, my lord. The prosecution will endeavour to prove that the snivelling, depraved, cowardly wretch whom you see cowering before you returned home on the night of the 14th of July in a particularly vicious and unpleasant frame of mind, had words with his wife, and then deliberately assaulted his pet ostrich by throwing a watering can at it. a watering can, my lord. A watering can, a large cylindrical tin-plated vessel with a perforated pouring piece much used by the lower classes for the purpose of artificially moistening the surface soil.
Thank you, Mr. Bartlett. Your knowledge is inexhaustible.
You are very gracious, my lad, if I may continue. The ostrich... the ostrich, my lad, an ostrich, a large, hairy, flightless bird, resident in Africa, remarkable for its speed in running and much prized for its feathers.
A kind of kookaburra.
No, my lad. The ostrich, taking fright, flew out of the window and landed on a passing ice cream cart.
Oh, that cart?
Ice cream cart, my lad. Ice cream, an artificial cream substitute, sweetened, flavoured and frozen, originally invented by the American Indians as an antidote to trench foot. Oh, thank you, my lad, if I may be allowed to continue. Landed on a passing ice cream cart, thereby causing a small dollop of ice cream...
Shut
up! I beg your pardon, my lad, I'm afraid I was trying to clear my throat. Thereby causing a small portion of ice cream to fall on the plaintiff, Mr. Sidney Bottle, a dwarf... who was hopping past at the time, thereby soiling Mr. Bottle's new suit. Those, quite simply, are the facts of the case, my lad, a very straightforward one, as I think we will all agree. It would appear that the rule laid down in Pritchard against the East Halifax Fishbone Glue Manufacturing Company would apply.
Was that the case of the slug and the lemonade bottle, Mr. Bottle?
No, my lad, it was the case of the human cannonball and the kiwi.
Ah, that was the kookaburra.
No, my lad.
I think his lordship is thinking of White against Phillips, Mr. Parker. The case of the aborigine who was about to launch his boomerang at a dingo that was chasing his kangaroo had his attention distracted by a lunging kookaburra, causing him to release the boomerang which struck a passing cobber in the outback.
An Australian case, my lad.
Where did you
suggesting we could
apply. But if we could continue,
I should like to call the first witness. Thank you, sir. Call Percy Molar.
Call Percy Molar. Call Percy Molar.
Hello.
You are Percy Molar.
That is correct. That is that man.
You are a company director. Of no fixed abode. You are also a music hall comedian.
Yes.
Are you married?
Yes, I am. My wife.
Will you, in your own words, please, Mr. Molar? Describe your wife to this court.
My wife, she's so fat that when she walks down the street, she looks like five dogs fighting in a sack. My wife, five dogs down the street.
Would I be correct in thinking that your wife has comparatively recently visited the West Indies?
Yes.
Jamaica.
Objection.
I'm sorry. I was more interested. Mr. Merlin, did you meet your wife in a revolving door?
No, she went of her own accord, I thank you.
No. Now, listen very carefully to the question, please, Mr. Merlin. Now, did you meet your wife in a revolving door?
Ah, yes, and we've been going around together ever since we met her.
Mr. Molar, I put it to you that your mother-in-law is bald.
I agree at once!
And would I be correct in thinking that our last...
Objection, my learned learned friend is not going to leave.
I am not. Does your mother-in-law... Did your
mother-in-law... Objection,
Molar, protest! My learned friend is treating Mr. Molar like a half-witness.
Objection, Molar, this is quite intolerable! My learned friend is making a mockery of this courtroom! What is more, me learned friend is neither learned nor me friend.
And in future, madam, with your permission, I shall refer to him as me ignorant enemy.
Thank you.
Now, if me ignorant enemy will allow me to get a few words in edgeways.
What ways, Mr. Barker?
It's time you retired, my lad. Mr. Molar, what has happened... Mr. Molar! What has happened to your bald mother-in-law recently?
My bald mother-in-law, she's had rabbits tattooed on her head. Because of the distance, they may look like hairs. Rabbits on her head because of the distance, like hairs. Bunny rabbits!
Thank you, Mr. Molar.
Bunny rabbits.
Thank you, Mr. Molar. And did you then see the ostrich fly out of the window and land on the passing ice cream cart, thereby causing a small dollop of ice cream to fall on the plate of Mr. Sidney Bottle, a dwarf who was hopping past at the time?
Yes!
No further questions. Just two questions, my lad. Mr. Molar.
No.
Does your house have a garden?
No, my house does definitely have a garden. Nick.
Do you see the accused?
Yes.
Does his house have a garden?
No, the accused's house does not have a garden, no.
In that case, would the accused be likely to have a spade?
No.
A scythe?
No.
A rake?
No.
Her?
No.
Trowel?
No.
Pitchfork?
No.
Pruning shears?
No.
Watering can?
Yes!
Damn! No further questions, my lord?
You may leave the court, Mr. Molar.
You're very kind, my lord.
Before I go, I'd like to sing a very, very lovely old English ballad. A ballad entitled...
I don't wish to hear that. Would you kindly leave the court?
Very well, my lord.
Call Arnold Fitch.
Call Arnold Fitch.
You are Arnold Fitch, alias...
Arnold Fitch!
You are Arnold Fitch, alias... You are Arnold Fitch, alias Arnold Fitch?
Yes.
Then why is your alias the same as your real name?
Because when I do use my alias, no one will expect it to be the same as my real name.
You are a company director.
Of course.
Did you throw the watering can?
No.
I suggest that you threw the watering can.
I did not.
I put it to you that you threw the watering can.
I didn't. I submit that you threw the watering can.
No. Did you or did you not throw the watering can?
I did not.
Yes or no? Did you throw the watering can?
No.
Answer the question!
I didn't throw it.
So he denied it! Very well. Would you be surprised to hear that you'd thrown the watering can?
Yes.
And do you deny not throwing the watering can?
Yes.
Ah!
No!
Very well, Mr. Quick! No, very well. Are we being sure to say that you were lying? If you denied that it was false to affirm, that it belied you to deny that it was untrue, that you were lying?
Oh!
You hesitate, Mr. Quick, to answer, please! The court is waiting! Yes! Yes! no further questions, Clark. Call Sydney Bottle. Just once.
Call Sydney Bottle!
Just one! You are Sydney Bottle, you are presumably a company director. You are also a dwarf. Now, will you tell the car, please, Mr. Bottle, on the night of the 14th of July, as you returned from work, do you remember, as you passed the... Mr. Bottle? Mr. Bottle? Oh, there he is, the lad. There he is. Could we give Mr. Bottle something to stand on, the lad, for the benefit of the jury? Exactly how drunk were you? Oh, come, Mr. Bottle. Surely I'm not going to try to pretend that you were sober. I have here, Mr. Bottle, conclusive proof that on the night in question you had consumed no less than 17 pink gins. Furthermore, Mr. Bottle, I put it to you that on the night you were well and truly stoned.
Well, that's going to have to do it for this edition of Funny Stuff. As usual, it seems as though I've chosen a topic for which there's at least an hour's worth of great material, and we only have half an hour allotted to us here on Friday nights. Well, let's see. Next week's program is Fire Sign Theater, and the week after that's going to be a very special program, our All-Star Salute to the Grand Sport of Baseball. So I think that ought to be a lot of fun. The address for comments or suggestions or whatever is Bob Claster with a C, Funny Stuff, KCRW-FM, 1900 Pico Boulevard, in Santa Monica, California, 90405. So let's hear from you. And that'll do it for tonight. This is your host, Bob Claster, thanking you for joining me, and I hope you enjoyed the program. And reminding you to keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Thanks a lot. Good night, everybody.